One time spring of 1931, my landlord received some chicks from the country, and put them in an enclosure at the end of the yard. They grew, and later I thought it interesting, listening to the first, uncertain attempts of two of them to crow. It was as interesting as is watching young, human males trying to take on grown-up ways. But then I thought of what was ahead, at 4 o'clock, or thereabouts, mornings. I'm a crank about sleeping, because at times I have put in much disagreeable time with insomnia. I worried about this, and I spoke about it. There was not another sound from the two little roosters. At last. Months went by. Confirmation. I was a wizard. One day in October, the landlord's son-in-law said to me, "There hasn't been a sound from them since." I tried not to look self-conscious. Said he, "Last May, one day, I was looking at them, and I said, in my own mind, if we lose tenants on account of you, I'll wring your necks." They never crowed again. Again, it's the principle of uncertainty, by which the path of a particle cannot be foretold, and by which there's no knowing who stopped the roosters. Well, we're both or one of us is very inferior in matters of magic, according to a story that is told of Madame Blavatsky. The little bird of a cuckoo clock annoyed her. Said she, "Damn that bird, shut up." The cuckoo never spoke again. By the cultivation of wild talents, I do not mean only the learning of the secret of the man they could not drown, and having the advantage of that ability, at times of shipwreck of the man they could not confine, so that enormous would be the relief from the messiahs of the legislatures, if nobody could be locked up for failure to keep track of all their laws of the woman they could not touch, so that there could be no more automobile accidents of myself and the roosters, though just hear my landlord's son-in-law will read scornfully, so that all radios can be stopped immediately after breakfast, and all tenors and sopranos forever. Only the secret of burning mansions in England, appearances of wounds on bodies, or of pictures on hailstones, bodies on benches of a Harlem park, strange explosions, and forced landings of aeroplanes, and the case of Lizzie Borden. Those are only specializations. If all are only different manifestations of one force, or radioactivity, transmediumization, or whatever, that is the subject for research and experiment that may develop. New triumphs and new disasters, happiness and miseries, a new era, in which people will think back, with contempt, or with horror, at our times, unless they start to think a little more keenly of their own affairs. In the presence of a poltergeist girl, who, so far as is now knowable, exerts no force, objects move. But this is a book of no marvels. In the presence of certain substances, which so far as is now knowable, exert no force, other substances move, or transmute into very different substances. This is a common phenomenon, to which the chemists have given the name catalysis. All around are wild talents, and it occurs to nobody to try to cultivate them, except as expressions of personal feelings, or as freaks for which to charge admission. I conceive of powers and the uses of human powers that will someday transcend the stunts of music halls and seances and sideshows, as public utilities have passed beyond the toy stages of their origins. Sometimes I tend to thinking constructively or batteries of witches teleported to Nicaragua, where speedily they cut a canal by dissolving trees and rocks the tumults of floods, and then magic by which they cannot touch houses, cyclones that smash villages, and then cannot push feathers. But also I think that there is nothing in this subject that is more reasonable than is the taboo that is preventing, or delaying, development. I mean that semi-enlightenment that so earnestly, and with such keen, one-sided foresight fought to suppress gunpowder and the printing press and the discovery of America. With the advantages of practical witchcraft would come criminal enormities. Of course they would be somewhat adapted to. But I'd not like to have it thought that I am only an altruist, or of the humble mental development of a utopian, who advocates something, as a blessing, without awareness of it as also a curse. Every folly, futility, and source of corruption of today, if a change from affairs primordial, was at one time preached as cure and salvation by some messiah or another. One reason why I never pray for anything is that I'm afraid I might get it. Or the uses of witchcraft in warfare. But that, without the sanction of hypocrisy, superintendence by hypocrisy, the blessing by hypocrisy, nothing ever does come about. Or military demonstrations of the overwhelming effects of trained hate, scientific uses of destructive bolts of a million hate power, the blasting of enemies by disciplined ferocities. And the reduction of cannons to the importance of firecrackers, a battleship at sea, or a toy boat in a bathtub. The palpitations of hypocrisy, the brass bands of hypocrisy, the peace on earth and goodwill to man of hypocrisy, or much celebration, because of the solemn agreements of nations to scrap their battleships and armed aeroplanes, outlawry of poison gases, and the melting of cannon once it is recognized that these things aren't worth a damn in the era of witchcraft. But of course not that witchcraft would be practiced in warfare. Oh, no, witchcraft would make war too terrible. Really, the Christian thing to do would be to develop the uses of the new magic, so that in the future a war could not even be contemplated. Later, a squad of poltergeist girls and they pick a fleet out of the sea, or out of the sky if, as far back as the year 1923, something picked French aeroplanes out of the sky, arguing that some nations that renounced fleets as obsolete would go on building them just the same. Girls at the front and they are discussing their usual not very profound subjects. The alarm, the enemy is advancing. Command to the poltergeist girls to concentrate, and under their chairs they stick their wads of chewing gum. A regiment bursts into flames, and the soldiers are torches. Horses snort smoke from the combustion of their entrails. Reinforcements are smashed under cliffs that are teleported from the Rocky Mountains. The snatch of Niagara Falls, it pours upon the battlefield. The little poltergeist girls reach for their wads of chewing gum. 28. That everything that is desirable is not worth having, that happiness and unhappiness are emotional rhythms that are so nearly independent of one's circumstances that good news or bad news only stimulate the amplitude of these waves, without affecting the ratio of ups to downs, or that one might as well try to make, in a pond, waves that are altitudes only as to try to be happy without suffering equal and corresponding unhappiness. But, so severely stated, this is mechanistic philosophy. And I am a mechanist. Sometimes something that is desirable is not only not worth having, but is a damn sight worse than that. Is life worth living? Like everybody else, I have many times asked that question, usually deciding negatively, because I am most likely to ask myself whether life is worth living at times when I am convinced it isn't. One day, in one of my frequent, and probably incurable, scientific moments, it occurred to me to find out. For a month, at the end of each day, I set down a plus sign, or a minus sign, indicating that, in my opinion, life had, or had not, been worth living, that day. At the end of the month, I totaled up, and I can't say that I was altogether pleased to learn that the pluses had won the game. It is not dignified to be optimistic. I had no units by which to make my alleged determinations. Some of the plus days may have been only faintly positive, and, here and there, one of the minus days may have been so ferociously negative as to balance a dozen faintly positive days. Of course, I did attempt gradations of notation, but they were only cutting pseudo-units into smaller pseudo-units. Also, out of a highly negative, or very distressing, experience, one may learn something that will mean a row of pluses in the future. Also, some pluses simply mean that one has misinterpreted events of a day, and is in for much minus. Or that nothing, a joy or a sorrow, the planet Jupiter, or an electron can be picked out of its environment, so as finally to be labeled either plus or minus, because as a finally identifiable thing it does not exist, or that such attempted isolations and determinations are only scientific. I have picked out witchcraft, as if there were witchcraft, as an identifiable thing, state, or activity. But, if by witchcraft, I mean phenomena as diverse as the mimicry of a leaf by a leaf insect, and illnesses in a house where Typhoid Mary was cooking, and the harmless impalement, on spears, of children, I mean, by witchcraft in general, nothing that can be picked out of one commonality of phenomena. All phenomena are rhythmic, somewhere between the metrical and the frenzied, with final extremes unreachable in an existence of the metrical unmetrical. The mechanical theory of existence is as narrowly lopsided as would be a theory that all things are good, large, or hot. It is Puritanism. It is the textbook science that tells of the clockwork revolutions of the planet Jupiter, and omits mention of Jupiter's little, vagabond moons, which would be fired from any job, in human affairs, because of their unpunctualities, and omits mention that there's a good deal the matter with the clockwork of most clocks. Mechanistic philosophy is a dream of a finality of exact responses to stimuli, and of absolute equivalences. Inasmuch as the advantages and disadvantages of anything can no more be picked out, isolated, identified, and quantitatively determined, than can the rise of a wave be clipped from its fall, it is only scientific dreamery to say what anything is equal and opposite to,